Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Aging Show.
There was another article that we had found back at the beginning of the summer. Jane Brody did an article on when tanning turns into an addiction. This was in the New York Times in June of 2010. And actually, now that we're coming out of the summer and people are trying to maintain their tans, this is as timely as it was then.
It really is. I loved this summer. I know it was extremely hot, and a lot of us complained about the extreme heat. But we had a number of sunny weekends than we've ever had before. So a lot of us were outside more than we realized. And we're enjoying that tanned look and probably want to keep it for these upcoming long winter months.
And that can be accomplished, but it needs to be accomplished wisely.
Well, the dermatologists have really been on board with this, and they began their campaign as long ago as 1983 in trying to get our attention to protect ourselves from the damage of overexposure with the sun. They've even been promoting the sun protective clothing, which I'm not sure a lot of us have really thought about.
Well, a long sleeve anything is sun protective clothing.
One of the areas that they've been critical of and would like us to think about and reduce are the tanning salon in the sense of the tanning bed. I don't know if you've ever had a tanning bed.
I haven't, but that was an article that, and actually in July of last year, of 2009, the International Agency for Research on Cancer moved towards classifying tanning beds to its highest cancer risk category, quote, carcinogenic to human. They had previously classified sun lamps and tanning beds as probably carcinogenic, so the move really ratcheted up the danger warnings. And they also enacted some restrictions on people under the age of 18 being able to do it without
parental permission.
Parental permission.
I don't know. Why is everything that I like to do is bad for me, Dennis? This is terrible.
Given that, and then given the fact that this article is really geared towards something that is, or has been determined to be addictive.
Right.
Explains why same thing as smoking. In the throes of all medical evidence that indicates that this is inappropriate, plain old bad for you, people still do it. Now, granted, you don't look sexy or beautiful smoking, but
however,
you do look sexy and beautiful with a tan. It does enhance appearance, but to what end?
But Dennis, that's partially because of the marketing that's been tossed to us. I mean, the cigarette smoking ads in past years. We are a society that has always...
Well, images 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look at the... And we had talked about this even before this article, the movie stars who have the beautiful tans who are on the red carpet. And in their case, they've actually been altered by a very clever application of that tanning process.
That may be true.
Vanity.
But the fact is that psychiatrists and psychologists, actually a dermatologist at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, a Dr. Richard Wagner, reported 5 years ago that as many as half of local beachgoers met the psychiatric definition of a substance abuse disorder. He had published this article, and in return, he received an email from a man in Canada who described himself as a poster boy for your study. The man said he traveled all over the world to maintain a tan, and even though he knew he could get cancer as a result, he could not stop. So that, I think, was catalyst in part for continued studies, and they've actually documented in group studies tendencies that are not right on the border. They are addictive.
Well, now part of going, just jumping back for a second here as well, they're saying that some of the patrons with the tanning, I'll call it the tanning bed vendors or businesses, are frequenting as many as 20 times per month, which is a huge amount. So we're starting young, and with that does tend to lend very strongly into an addictive behavior.
You know, one thing, as we were reading this, remember we were talking about the 3.5 million new cases of skin cancer, and then I stopped and said, wait a minute, and an estimated 68,700 cases of melanoma.
And that's when you went to the definition.
Said, wait a minute, aren't they the same? Apparently,
no,
they're the same. Melanoma is skin cancer, but it is the most severe form of skin cancer. The interesting thing, though, is that because just as with COPD that we talked about before, this is something that accumulates over time. You don't expose yourself to the sun and immediately develop skin cancer or melanoma.
Have you ever had a screening?
I have not. Have you?
Yes, I have. And it's very clear. It was one of those where you have your face in the machine and it's darkened and you can see, and there's quite a bit. And this goes back to lifeguarding as a kid, being outside swimming without any protection, because back in those days, we didn't even have any idea how much that a tan actually does represent skin damage.
Now, of course, you wore those bathing suits, though, that had the long legs and... You had the bonnet.
No, not. I didn't see you on the beach, actually. But then again, you were. I guess we were all out tanning too much, weren't we? Continuing on with the article, we have specific examples of those who used to be out in the sun and what their skin looks like later on. And she does reference one of her aunts who was in her 90s and never, ever went out in the sun and what her skin looked like. And that's a compelling.
Well, there were two doctors paragraph. From Washington, University of Washington, Dr. Horning and Dr. Porsatter. And they said that although many of the participants in the study said that a tanned appearance is their strongest motivation for sunbathing and using a tanning bed, tanners also report mood enhancements, relaxation, and socialization. There was another study that was done by Dr. Wagner and two other individuals.
Can you pronounce those names?
I'm not even going to try. And two tests of substance abuse were administered to 145 people sunbathing at Galveston Island Beach. One is a modified version of the test often used to root out alcohol addiction, and it's called CAGE, C-A-G-E, and it's an acronym for four questions. Have you ever felt you needed to cut down on your tanning? Have people annoyed you by criticizing your tanning? Have you ever felt guilty about tanning? Have you ever felt you needed to tan first thing in the morning as an eye-opener? And the authors of the report found that 26% of the beachgoers met the CAGE criteria for addiction.
Mm.
And in the second test, a modified version of a psychiatric official diagnostic criteria for substance abuse disorder, 53% of the respondents scored positive. Individuals who chronically and repetitively expose themselves to ultraviolet light to tan may have a novel type of ultraviolet light substance-related disorder. Release of pleasure-giving endorphins in the brain of UV abusers is the likely stimulus for tanning addiction.
Those endorphins strike again.
It makes them feel good.
Yeah, and I think the light also makes people feel good. And what they think is the appearance.
I thought this was most telling.
Yes.
At the end of the article, there was another doctor from Wake Forest who demonstrated that frequent salon tanners experienced withdrawal symptoms when given the drug naltrexone, which blocks the pleasurable effects of narcotics. Frequent tanners, but not occasional tanning patrons, reported symptoms like nausea and jitteriness when naltrexone blocked their endorphins. Now, that's kind of a no-brainer once you get that kind of evidence.
If you're one of the people who goes 20 times a month, that could be a real possibility. Now, for me, back in the olden days of tanning beds, I used to fall asleep.
Now, you wanted to look at the alternative of sunless tanning.
Yes.
And we did find an article which was published by DermNet NZ, which is a New Zealand dermatological society, and they referred to a
dihydroxytone.
And also known as DHA, and
it's a fake tan.
It is the most popular way of gaining a tan-like appearance without sun exposure, as it carries less health risks than any other available methods. To date, it's the only active ingredient approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and we were careful to pick up an article that was as recently dated as possible, and I think that this one came out this was updated August 28th of this year.
Now, this is in all of the effective sunless tanners contain this.
Right.
And it's
to varying degrees based upon the shade of darkness that you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. So there's hope.
And there is also something that is called a sunless tanning booth, which, for those that remember Earl Scheib, is like a paint booth.
Who is Earl Scheib?
Earl Scheib was a discount.
Dennis, where do you come up with this stuff?
Earl Scheib used to advertise on TV all the time, $49.99 to get your car painted from top to bottom.
What year was this?
Well, it's everybody.
Is this like in the era?
Remember the Model Ts that were all black?
Is this in the era of dialing for dollars, no, Dennis, or what?
While you were alive. In any event, a sunless tanning booth is basically a paint booth where they spray you with a liquid form of DHA. It will last
up to 7 days?
Well, 5 to 7 days. It will darken in approximately 8 to 24 hours to the desired depth of shade. But depending on the area, the same color can be maintained with repeat applications every 1 to 4 days. So it can't be cheap.
So it's like waxing your car?
It's a what?
It's like waxing your car.
It's made by Simonize.
Right.
I don't.
I'm being silly, but it's also the preparation of exfoliating your skin
It lasts as long as your skin stays unexfoliated.
Right.
But you're always shedding skin.
But it's safer. That's the important
part.
And it will go away in 7 days or so.
So for the vein, there are alternatives. The last thing you want to do is to go out there and you don't look good on the other side of the grass. So
well, Dennis,
that's where you don't want to be.
I'm in the vein group. I can't help
it. I know.
I know.
Okay.
There you go.
Should patients read the doctor's notes?
Absolutely.
Can they read the doctor's notes?
Not necessarily.
Well, that's the subject of a Pauline Chen article that appeared in the New York Times. It talked about a couple who wanted a copy of what she had written, she's a doctor, in their medical file. And her staff became alarmed, thinking that this was ultimately a ploy to get their documents so that they could sue Dr. Chen.
Mm-hmm. I also thought that perhaps it wasn't legal to give it to the patient.
Well, it wasn't until 1996, but this talked about 40 years. For 40 years, the tension over patient access has been playing out in hospitals, clinics, and doctors' offices. It was not until the 1970s that a few states began giving patients the right to see their own notes.
I would never have guessed that. I would have thought I had complete right to see that.
I would have thought that, too.
Especially since I'm paying the bill.
And apparently the doctors were worried that their notes might become a source of unnecessary stress for patients. Now, that could also be read as unnecessary stress for the doctors.
Well, they don't actually, a lot of them don't have the best handwriting, and here's an example of a routine abbreviation in jargon such as SOB, which means shortness of breath.
And anorexic, which is a general lack of appetite. And the doctors are fearful that those would be misinterpreted, or they could be not only misinterpreted, but the patient may just drop the doctor because how dare he think that I'm an SOB.
Right. Now, there are some other comments. I know, just speaking from experience, looking at a review of an x-ray or a CAT scan that said unremarkable, which means
right.
In doctor land,
it's not a big
nothing
deal.
To remark
nothing,
about.
Nothing to remark about.
Not that it isn't, you know, that it's a boring x-ray. It's just nothing to remark about.
Now, we mentioned 1996, and that was the year in which the legislation called HIPAA, which you may have heard about, and every time you go to a doctor's office, they ask you to fill out a form or sign a form that acknowledges that they have the right to be able to transmit information about your health to your insurance company or other interested parties. And this gave the patient the right to see their medical files, but in reality, few have. And requesting your medical files generally requires, from my experience, that they won't just hand you your files. They'll hand you a copy. And you have to pay for the copying charges.
You know, Dennis, I was referencing at another time with a physical that I had this week. I've been going to this doctor for over 15 years. I didn't even realize it. The records are an inch thick.
Oh, yeah. Mine.
Of good health.
Mine is, it's a doorstop.
That's true, because you're older.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. There's a program that has been enacted. It's a study in which the researchers are trying to determine whether, in fact, patients want to see their notes and whether doctors and patients want to see each other after the patient sees the notes. So what they're doing is the program is called Open Notes, and it involves over 100 primary care physicians and approximately 25,000 patients. And they're testing it in Boston, Seattle, and in Pennsylvania.
I really wonder how many patients, after the first glance, will bother to return and read them.
Well, I don't know. What they're going to do is, within how many days of a doctor's visit, The doctor's office is going to email the patient and direct them to a website, a secured website, where they can view the signed physician notes. And the patients will receive a second email 2 weeks prior to any return visit reminding them that the notes from their previous visit are available for review.
What I did find interesting is that they are actually looking at, after a year, will the patients and doctors still want to continue sharing notes?
Right.
Is it a big question?
And that's the whole concern. Finding patients who were willing to participate in this was no problem. Finding doctors who were willing is quite another issue. Now, many were worried about workload and issues of clarity. And I know that I talked to my doctor about electronic records, and he said, you know, it may curtail some of the candor that the doctor feels privileged or able to put into the notes when describing the patient, and that the notes may become more sterile and not necessarily a clear reflection of their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be an observation, obviously, but there won't be any embellishment that the doctor may or may not have felt that was necessary.
Well, the embellishment may be something as very innocent as assisting them in recalling the patient.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of the number of files and number of patients that are served.
Yeah, that's true. The patient that had two heads, you remember
right.
him?
Or the one that rides a motorcycle or
the
something
one I
along
couldn't
that
stand
one.
And thank God he never came back.
Those little rapport builders.
All right. Okay.
We just got word that Martin West, who is the cinematographer that did the documentary on the lives of 50 Westport Weston artists, his show, which we profiled on an earlier broadcast, is going to be aired in November on Connecticut Public Television. It's years in the making, a journey into late life creativity, and it will be on Channel 10 in the Lower Fairfield County area.
It will be aired on Sunday, November 14th at 12 noon, and it will be rebroadcast Sunday, November 21st at 10:30 p.m.
And I've seen it, Dawn's seen it. It is well worth watching, and it's very inspirational because it has people who are artists, and these people are aged 70 to 105 years old, plying their passion. And it just goes to show that you don't hang up the spurs. You just go on and continue doing what you love to do.
That's a little kind of a cowpoke.
A little bit of a cowpoke.
Actually, Dennis, if there's any particular artist that you want more information on, there's CDs that accompany that particular documentary at a lot of our area libraries.
Okay.
We're going to have to take a break because somebody's got to pay for this. And I guess it's me. We'll be back on the other side, and we'll continue with the Healthy Aging Show. Be right back.